From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Oxford-educated classicist Spencer Clavin, author of How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
Welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast, a podcast that is committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to your earbuds. And today is no exception. I'm actually quite sick. I've been traveling, got back from California and Dallas with a really bad cold. I probably would have stayed in bed if it wasn't for the fact that I have the opportunity to do a podcast with Spencer Clavin. I'm going to introduce him formally in just a moment, but let me tell you a little bit about how I came into contact with his writing. A few weeks ago, my assistant came up to me and said, "You got to read this book, a book titled How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. It is fantastic." And then a short time later, my son David said something very similar. So I started reading the book, and I loved the book. I got to a part in the book where Spencer Clavin says, "Look, I'm not trying to proselytize you to my tribe," or something of that sort. He said, "I wish everybody would join my tribe, but that's not my purpose." So I asked my assistant, "Well, what tribe does Spencer Clavin belong to?" And he said, "Well, he's Episcopalian and he's married to a man." And he said that after doing some research, because when I first asked him the question, he didn't know. Then he checked into it. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. I don't think my audience would appreciate me doing a podcast with Spencer Clavin, because I've often talked about the redefinition of marriage and many aspects that are related to the issue of sexuality, homosexuality in particular. And, you know, I certainly have a different perspective than Spencer Clavin has. So I decided the best thing to do was to talk to Spencer, and I did that. And we had a collegial conversation, and my feeling about this is that I wanted in the prologue to the podcast at least to identify the elephant in the room, but we can continue our conversation one-on-one in a different forum. This is not the forum for doing that. In this particular forum, what I want to do is talk about the brilliance of a book that I think is very worth reading. And so I'm delighted to have Spencer Clavin on the Hank Unplugged podcast. He's a scholar. He's a writer. He's a host of a podcast called The Young Heretics. He has a lifelong devotion to the great works and principles of the West. And after studying Greek and Latin at Yale, he spent 5 years at Oxford, completing his doctorate in ancient Greek literature. He now works as an editor at the Claremont Institute, which is a think tank for the recovery and preservation of America's founding ideals. He has written for many outlets, including The Atlantic, Newsweek, The Federalist, and The Daily Wire. And as I just mentioned, he's also the author of a book, How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. I sort of knew about Spencer through his dad, actually. I didn't really know that much about Spencer, but he's got a brilliant father who's a very accomplished writer, actor, I guess.
You'd say so?
Yeah. I mean, he's one accomplished human being. My brother kept saying, "You got to have Andrew Clavin on your podcast." But now I got the younger, smarter edition because he's, I always say that about my son. I go, "You should be doing this podcast. You're younger, you're better looking, and you're probably a whole lot smarter than I am." But that's what we're getting today. Spencer Clavin.
I'm going to tell my dad you said that just to rub it in.
Of course. You got to take the opportunity when you can. But no, seriously, I'm just delighted to have you on the podcast, Spencer.
Thank you, Hank. And the feeling is mutual. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for that very generous introduction and for the grace that you showed me, not only in our conversation offline, but just now. I know that, as you said, you and I have strongly differing opinions on some matters pertaining to human sexuality, and I'm sure that will be true for your audience as well. So I'm grateful to them also for their grace. And I think that it will prove warranted. I hope it will, because as you mentioned in the book, I say quite expressly, you know, this is not my effort to make an apologia for my personal life or to persuade you, to draw you into some program of my personal interest. It's actually just the opposite. I'm interested in my readers and in the challenges that they are looking out at. And today in America, in the West, more generally, I think we are confronted with enormous, you might call them structural problems, to use a kind of trendy word. And people, you know, when I do my podcast or when I write, you know, out online in the world, I hear from people who want very admirably and very desperately to contribute something to righting the ship, to helping solve some of these problems. How do we even think about some of these catastrophic things we see going on in the news? It seems like every day. And something that seems to me to be a problem is that when we ask that question, we think about it from the perspective of as if we were Ron DeSantis, or as if we were somebody who's tomorrow going to be charged with writing a political program that will, you know, obtain across America or change a whole state. And what happens when we think that way is despair sets in, because most of us aren't Ron DeSantis. Most of us actually are living individual lives in our communities, in our churches, in our neighborhoods. And so when we look at these giant problems that I address in the book, crises about religion and where the West is headed, and, you know, how we're going to manage our politics, I wanted to write something for the rest of us. How can we, who aren't maybe in giant positions of power or we're going to muscle the wheel of history into some new direction, how can we wake up every day and draw on the great wisdom that is handed down to us through the traditions of the West, and how can we live that out? So that's what the book's about.
Yeah, and eloquently stated. I want to talk about another crisis for just a moment, and that is the crisis imbued in the introduction to you as a person, and that is, if you and I differ, what's the crisis that is entailed by not communicating one with another?
Well, you know, as I say in the introduction to the book, I explain a little bit about the meaning of the word crisis, which is one of those ones we throw around all the time, right? We have a crisis in the supply chain. We have a crisis in our airlines right now, you know, and those may all be very serious problems. But the word crisis comes from a Greek word, krisis, with a pretty specific meaning. And that is, it's a moment of two incompatible, irreconcilable opposites or opposite options. And this is central to, for example, the Greek idea of tragedy. So you think Orestes is a man who must avenge his father's murder. The Greek mythological figure Orestes must avenge his father's murder, but his father's murderer is his mother. And it's also a moral imperative that he not do harm to his mother. And so he is caught in between the rocks of these two irreconcilable issues. And if you and I, for instance, have these disagreements, there's two possible options. Either we're in a genuine crisis, which means there is no common ground we can share. Our first principles, our premises are so radically opposed to one another that there's just no way forward for us except either violence or catastrophe. Or there is some way, some first principle that we can chase our discussion down to and proceed from there. And that's the basis of rational argument. That's how you resolve a crisis, or at least avoid a crisis, is if you can find the deeper root causes of the kind of day-to-day news cycle problems that you're having. And that's what going back to the great texts does. That's why they're there for us, is because they show us what's lying underneath these, you know, irreconcilable attitudes that we have, and help us maybe to chart a way forward.
Yeah, well said. Your book is titled How to Save the West. The most obvious question I can ask you is, how do you define the West? I find it fascinating that you have put your finger, I think, on the seminal definition of what we're talking about when we talk about the West or Western civilization.
Well, thank you. I'm humbled to hear you say that. I'm really drawing there on a philosopher named Leo Strauss, who some people really love and other people may have never heard of, but he's reaching back further, you know, behind himself as well to this core notion of Athens and Jerusalem. And, you know, when you say the West, somebody actually, when I said I was writing a book about the West, they said, oh, I love John Wayne movies. I love spaghetti Western. And I said, that, me too, but that's actually not what I'm talking about. There's all sorts of things that come in people's minds when you say, I believe in Western civilization. As I say in the introduction, a lot of people think racist. That's just a racial chauvinist concept. You're trying to elevate Europe and white people above all other cultures. And that's certainly not true for a number of reasons.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with scholar Spencer Klavan. Is it closing time for the West? In his new book, How to Save the West, Spencer Klavan warns that the situation is dire, but we face no crisis today that we have not faced before. Summoning insights of Plato, Aristotle, the Bible, and the founding fathers of the United States, Dr. Klavan shows our hope for the future is in the wisdom of the past, wisdom that will improve the reader's own life and can ultimately save the West. To receive your copy of How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated. This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Oxford-educated classicist Spencer Clavin writes, "The narrative that old books are worthless is designed to keep you from discovering that they are not. For when it comes to the fundamental questions we're now facing, the answers that we find through the great ancient traditions are saner and clearer than the options presented to us by our modern gurus. The situation in the West is dire," says Dr. Clavin, "but every crisis we face today, we have faced before, and we can surmount each one." Be sure to read How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Spencer Clavin, as they continue their conversation.
There's all sorts of things that come into people's minds when you say, "I believe in Western civilization." A lot of people think racists. That's just a racial chauvinist concept. You're trying to elevate Europe and white people above all other cultures. And that's certainly not true for a number of reasons, one of which is that when we use the word the West with a capital W, we're actually embracing a much broader and deeper array of history that is rooted in the intellectual and spiritual inheritance of these two great pillars of our civilization and our many societies, America included, but not limited to America. And so when we talk about Athens, what do we mean? Well, we're really rooting in Athens the pagan wisdom of Greece and Rome, the philosophy of people like Aristotle and Plato, who really, you know, peered as far as it was possible to peer, I believe, into the reaches of human reason. What can human reason uncover? And through long trial and error and wrestling with their ideas, we've inherited in the West so many wonderful concepts that stave off, for instance, you know, political catastrophe. We rooted a lot of our ideas about how to do politics together in this Athenian, Greco-Roman kind of heritage that we have. But that is only half of the picture. And sometimes I think people miss this out. You talk about Western culture, you start talking about Plato, Aristotle, that's all great. But there is a whole separate other side to that coin, and that's what's captured in the word Jerusalem. Because in Jerusalem, of course, we have the great capital of monotheism in the ancient Near East, this wild and crazy for the time idea that the Lord your God is one, that there is one God. He has a unified and unitary idea about right and wrong. Those things are absolute and objective. They don't depend on what you or I feel or think about them, and that that one God has authority over all of creation, that he created the world and continues to operate and speak in it. That's Jerusalem, which of course is passed down into the Christian faith as well in the person of Jesus and then in his disciples and interpreters and in the gospel. And these two pillars, you might say, kind of come together in miraculously almost in the Roman Empire and in its legacy in Europe. So a lot of the European countries are certainly Western countries. But one of the good things about this definition of the West is that it takes a little bit of the pressure off of us to, quote unquote, save the world, which is something you hear about all the time these days. Young kids, you know, they don't want to have children because climate change is going to destroy the world. They can't do anything before they save the world. And that leads again to that paralysis, right? But instead, what we need to understand is that we are carrying, each of us, a little light of human reason and faith. And the traditions of the West are what keeps that light burning. That's how we carry that tradition forward, no matter what may come. Because of course, the world being what it is, all sorts of terrible things may happen to us. They may not, but we need to be prepared for anything. And the way we do that is by understanding ourselves, not just as Americans. Of course, we are, if we are citizens of this country, not just as, you know, this or that person who lives in this city block, but as an inheritor of this vast tradition across time and space of Athens and Jerusalem.
What about the death wish on the part of many people within Western civilization for the demise of the West? You know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go.
That's right. Yeah, that's the chant that, as I recall, Jesse Jackson led, which sort of precipitated a major part of the crisis of the university that we're now seeing. This idea that by schooling people in a tradition, that is the tradition of the West, the great texts of Western civilization, what you're actually doing is you're excluding people, or you're repressing them, or any number of other nasty buzzwords, right? And of course, this is exactly backwards. The way that this narrative works is it points at the people who have carried the traditions of the West forward. And then it tells whoever you're talking to, well, you don't look like that, so you don't belong in the West. They're trying to keep you out. They're trying to keep you down. The problem with this is that the great traditions of the West are the only time-tested way for blowing the lid off of all the tribalism and all of the sectarianism that is natural to man in his fallen state. I mean, this is, for us, this is the way that we see our way beyond tribalism. But, you know, during the latter half of the last century, the accusation was made, based in large part on sort of neo-Marxist ideas, that these were actually tools of oppression, tools of power to keep out certain people. And you look at our world now, which is, you know, many decades on from the beginning of that project of just shutting out the Western civilization, making us think that the West is evil and wrong and trying to deconstruct these ideas. And how's it working out for us? We have not gotten less tribalist. We haven't gotten toward this world of kumbaya where everybody can get along together because there's no evil Western oppression. In fact, we've become more tribalist. And indeed, the same left that was kicking those texts out of the universities in the latter half of the 1900s in this century has begun to define us very much in terms of our white bodies, our black bodies, our, you know, by POC, whatever you want to call it, right? And you ask why that is. Well, it's because, in fact, we've pulled the rug. We've been spending years trying to pull the rug out from under the ideas that actually define man as soul embodied in the image of God, right? That's the idea won over long centuries. That's the idea that unites us. And without it, of course, we're going to end up in a kind of death spiral. Of course, we're going to end up, you know, refusing to have children because the world is so doomed, everything's falling apart. Of course, we're going to end up at daggers drawn because we've lost that common ground. That's what creates that crisis that we talked about at the beginning, is if you say that the only lifeline for us out of tribalism is actually just another tool of the oppressor, then you're going to end us up in a situation that looks a lot like where we are now.
Before we get into the actual crises themselves, I want you to comment a little bit about the structure of your book. I've written quite a few books myself, and I very much appreciated the way you laid out this book, where you have two chapters relating to each one of the crises.
That's right. Well, I think for me, what's key is, and this is actually something, as I say in the book, that this is a state of affairs that's represented in Plato's famous allegory of the cave, that we sort of are born into this world where these shadows kind of flicker across our vision, but we don't really see the truth. We all, I think, live in this constant social media news cycle stream, even if we don't even have a Twitter account or we're trying to, you know, keep offline as much as possible. Still, the things that, you know, go up on the news feed, the things that we talk about at the water cooler every day, it's like this stream of just thing after thing, most of them bad. And we don't really know how to make sense of them or how to unify them. And so the point of each section of the book, as you say, each section is two chapters long. And the first chapter begins with some modern things that we've all thought about. So, you know, this particular Trump scandal or that particular issue to do with transgenderism. And gradually, in the first chapter of each section, I lead you into the kind of underlying anxieties, questions, and indeed in the underlying crisis that's actually behind all of these news stories that sort of flicker across our screen, to help us kind of understand what the root questions are that we're dealing with. And that gets us into a place where, in the second chapter, then we can start to talk about the great answers of the past to these problems. Because one of the things you discover when you start to dig under this stuff is that they're really, you know, of course, we are facing unique issues with our modern technology and with the news and so forth. But underneath all that, what we're actually up against is very basic questions that have come up again and again throughout the history of the West. They're some of the core issues. What is a human being, right? What is the purpose of human life? And because they've come up so many times in the history of the West, there have been many great answers or tools for answering those questions that are on offer if we'll just look, if we'll just crack open the books which have been so maligned as evil and oppressive and racist or what have you. So as you say, each section, there are five sections, each dealing with one crisis. And in each section, I sort of lay out the crisis, help you to see it underneath the news cycle in the first chapter. And then in the second chapter, try to offer you some wisdom from the canon for thinking about making things better in your own life.
Honestly, Spencer, I would buy this book if it were just based on the first crisis. I thought that was a brilliant first introduction to a primary crisis, the crisis of reality. And I want you to delineate for our audience what the crisis of reality entails.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with scholar Spencer Klavan. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of How to Save the West, Ancient Wisdom for Five Modern Crises by Dr. Spencer Klavan. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.